the story's too long to tell, but Mickey took him hunting one year because Billy always wanted to go hunting. And the bottom line was Mickey was trying to play a practical joke on Billy. And the doc's property that he was hunting on, the guy needed his old horse taken out, and he couldn't bring himself to do it. So Mickey acts like he's mad at the doc and leads the horse off into the woods and takes it out. And he's coming back to the car, and the truck's empty, and there's a gun missing out of the gun rack. And he hears a loud bang, and he goes over it, and Billy's standing over one of the guy's cows and said, "All right, you got his horse. I took his cow out. Let's get out of here."
That story is actually in the book. It's a great story.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Because Johnny swore that was true.
In the book, it was a mule and two cows.
Oh, is that what it was?
But it was a great story. And apparently, Mickey Mantle told that story every time he would go to, he did a lot of speaking, obviously. Every time he went to a benefit or a dinner, I think he'd open with that to talk about Billy Martin. That was a guy that was a tortured soul, by the way.
Oh, man.
Barbara, I don't know if you remember Billy Martin.
Absolutely. I'm a longtime Yankee fan.
Oh, you're from the East, of course.
Upstate New York. That's right.
But, I mean, he had four marriages, and, I mean, he lived his first year after being the Yankee manager in a suite in the Hasbrook Heights Sheraton and went to a dive bar. He didn't even go home for Christmas with a kid at home. Had a daughter who wound up in a Colombian jail, because she was drug trafficking. He just, everything was baseball. And it's a shame. I mean, had he lived, he only lived to, I think, 57 or 58 when he slid off a road on his way home and died.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fascinating story about this guy.
I have to read that because there's just not enough color in the game. And obviously Billy had issues, but I mean, what a colorful guy for folks to talk about and write about, and that's a vanishing breed.
Well, now, Tom Whaley, Barbara, has been with the Saints, started in 93, the year of their inception, and he left for four seasons with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays and then had gone, started up a team in Boston, then returned. So you've been with the team every year since 93, but four seasons. Who has been the biggest character on the Saints that has come through there? And you've had a few of them.
We've had some fun ones. I mean, I think the biggest character we had that folks might know was Brian Buchanan played for us, and he was a Yankee, came up with the Yankees, played with the Twins actually for a few years. And Buck was a great guy. He'd get George all the time because George might take him out for a pinch runner,
your manager,
or eighth inning. And what Buck would do is go into the clubhouse, and there was a view from the Midway Stadium clubhouse from the door of the clubhouse, literally, which where the locker room was. There was no hallway or anything, straight out to the pitcher's mound. And the fans couldn't see anybody in the locker room, but Buck would go in there and finish his shower and just walk around with no clothes on, and George would go out to take a pitcher out, and he had a direct view back into the clubhouse, and Buck would just be standing there
naked
as the day he was born. And he used to get the biggest kick out of that because George would turn around from making his view like, "Oh, God, stop."
You know what they should have done? Did they ever put the camera there and then have that little thing where it's like hazes out the private part? They should have. If you had it, now you have a scoreboard. Had you had one where you can do that,
right.
It would have worked out wonderfully for you.
Yeah, he was great. And then we had another guy, Josh Renick, that was a kid from Florida. Not many folks knew about Josh. I think he made it up as high as Double A, but he was a real. He was a real character. And so, we've had our share here, they're a lot of fun. That makes the days.
And I interviewed him when he was there, and he actually seemed pretty reserved and not a bad guy. What do you remember about Daryl Strawberry, or were you gone during that period?
No, I was there. I was there in 96. And, he was. He was kind of quiet. I think he was. My reaction to and I don't profess to know Daryl real well. He seemed like he'd been humbled a little bit because he'd been told no by, I think, at that time was 28 major league teams, and he wanted to come back. And so he just had a real humble attitude about him, quiet. The thing I remember about Daryl, and this was the thing, there was a way to get out of the ballpark where he could have gone sort of through the office and out to his car and left every night. He came up the way most of the players did, where you came out of the clubhouse and you had to go through the stadium concourse to leave. And Daryl came up that way. He was with us for probably 6 weeks or so. And every home game he came up there, and some nights he'd sit out there for an hour and a half and sign every autograph for every kid, really good natured, taking pictures, the whole thing. And so that's what I remember of Daryl. I mean, obviously he had issues before and even after he left us, there were some things that he might regret. But boy, when he was with us, he was a great guy. just a great guy to have around.
We're talking to St. Paul Saints Executive Vice President Tom Whaley. Barbara Behrens from Behrens & Miller is with us. And now, Barbara, you know about the Saints. They have a pig.
Yes, I know.
Did you have a favorite pig that over the years? Do you remember any of the names? Or
I don't remember any of the names, but I love the pig. I love the pig. The pig, the baseball-carrying pig, is just genius. Genius.
Tell her about, so you told me about one of them earlier. Tell her about some of your favorite ones. Well, we had Barack Obama.
Yeah, Barack Obama. Brett Favre was one a few years ago that was good.
Brett Favre.
We had Bud Squealig one year.
I remember Bud Squealig,
yep. Bud Squealig, Garrison Squealer, Kevin Bacon. Gosh. It was so silly, man. I mean, we have the best time. That's one of my favorite days of the year is we do a name the team contest and we get these 100 names in, and 20 of them you fall over just dying for breath. Folks just have great. We had one year, this was probably 3 or 4 years ago, we had Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries. We had two in one year.
That's a great one.
They did get divorced at the end of the year. They didn't make it.
Well, and that's the thing. I talked to the guy, and I used the same guy to raise the pigs, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of a sad story what happens to those pigs after they leave the Saints because they get big.
They get too big, and so they...
Why don't you go with when we got him, he was a miniature potbelly pig. Now, he's no... My wife, when I got him for it, she wanted one, held it, like, in one hand in her shoulder, like, you know, some people hold a clutch or a purse. My God, now you need a crane to lift him.
Yeah, they get big. They're probably, by the time they leave us, they'll go easily probably 275, 300. I mean, and they're not gigantic, but I mean, not an ounce of fat on the things.
Well, you know what you should tell the guy that has them? You know what? We'd like to have him come back for the banquet.
Well, we did one year, the very first year. We got ticketed by the SPCA because we advertised before the last game we were going to have a pig roast, and we meant it as a Dean Martin type roast.
Yeah.
But the SPCA... You know, they're not known for their sense of humor. They had a bunch of pickers out there. And so we our giveaway item were those little bags of, like, knives and forks and napkins. And then when he came inside, there was a smoker, in full-on smoking
capacity
at home plate. But no, we didn't do it there.
Well, Tom, we appreciate it. We got to talk again. Tom Whaley, Executive Vice President of the St. Paul Saints. Thanks so much, and enjoy that new stadium. I know you will.
Will do. Thanks a lot, Bob.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Barbara Behrens is with us. Barbara Behrens from Behrens & Miller. Her law firm helped kick the NFL's ass with the NFLP and NFLPA and AP. We're going to take a quick break, come back with a little threesome of questions. And Barbara, I want you to take part in that. And I think I've heard through back channels there may be an Adrian Peterson question in there. So let's see when we return.
The Benchwarmers, featuring Dave Schwartz from Care 11 and Jill Hammy.
Jim Craig, over the past couple of Olympics, there was a lot of talk about not bringing back the professionals. How do you feel about that?
You had a chance to have the best athletes in the world compete, which was great. But I think they could create their own venue, the World Championships, and they could put it on a schedule that's probably more conducive to their working careers.
The Benchwarmers, every Sunday morning at 10 on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket. The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
3-0, it's magic number.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's
magic number. Somewhere in that ancient eternity.
This is the walk-up music for the threesome. He found it.
Magic number.
It works.
Past the present,
nope. I gotta say this about it. I give him a lot of crap, but he does an okay job.
I agree. He does a great job.
Well, also great.
My client now.
Yeah, now you're cool. So now he's great. Your client now is a good point. Barbara Behrens from Behrens & Miller Law Firm. Besides helping the NFLPA and Adrian Peterson kick the NFL's ass in court, she's now representing young Hellboy here for his Saints tryout on May 7th in the outfield. You should show up and say you just want to be the designated runner.
I'll just take some kind of contract where they give me money.
Look at you. You're all about the money.
If I don't have to do anything, that'd be great.
You run the run.
Yeah.
You go in the outfield, you track down some. If you run, though, you don't have to hit. I don't know why teams don't do that. Get some track guy who can run the bases. They probably can't slide, though. They just keep going.
Yeah, they bob their head over the bag and think they're
there.
They'll
put their chest out and their arms. Then they'll run into the center field wall as they decelerate. All right. Let's... Let's give Barbara and I some of those questions. Who do we have asking?
Well, you'll find out right now. Okay. Hopefully you can understand what he says.
Oh, God.
Hey, Bob. It's Gollum from Middle-earth. I have three questions for you.
Let's hear them.
Number one, what would you do with Adrian Peterson?
What would I do with him? I would see if I can trade him, but I'd want a first-round pick for him. I would set a number that I want, and I would not trade him unless I had it. And then I would tell him, if I didn't trade him, get your ass in camp, because you're being paid a lot of money. You got paid $12 million last year for doing nothing. You're going to get paid more than that this year, and either show up or we'll suspend you and you get nothing. As a matter of fact, we'll fine you if you don't show up. I don't think he has the leverage. Now, Barbara, I know you represented him, and I don't want to make it awkward for you, but this is something that should and can be worked out.
Well, hopefully it can be. I believe that if the parties sit down, I think it will work out.
I think, you know, what I think they have to do, too, is I understand how agents work. They sit in the room and the player doesn't. But this is one where, and I know they met before, but Zimmer and Adrian Peterson, those are the two that need to sit down and let Zimmer really find out if he wants to play for him or not. And not have the GM in the room and not have the agent in the room. Just let the coach and the player talk about it and let them see. And then if Zimmer comes back convinced it can't work, he just won't. He's not the guy I want because he won't play for me. And then do what you can to make a deal.
Well, I found whenever you have a dispute, I don't care what kind of dispute, if the decision makers are in the room and look at one another eye to eye, sometimes magic happens. And I think it makes sense to encourage folks to do that.
Well, and that also is rare. As a matter of fact, with all, whenever there has been a strike or the threat of a strike in major sports, whether it would be baseball or the NFL or any of the other sports, the problem becomes, and tell me if this has been your experience, how I perceive it is, it's not, it gets off of what the real issues are, and it's the guy from the league and the guy from the Players Association just banging heads, because neither one wants to give in to the other one and admit that he gave in on something. It's not really about what they're arguing. It's that I'm not going to give in, because, you know, we talked a little while ago during a break about athletes. They have the athlete mentality. I can't lose. And they refuse to. Now, is that your experience, or am I off base on that?
Well, I think ultimately, with, for example, any sports league and its players, they have to get along at some point. They need one another. Yep. And I think ultimately, reasoned heads prevail, and things do get worked out.
Well, I for the Vikings' sake, I know that they'd like to get this worked out. I'm sure AP wants it too, but we'll see how that one plays out. But my feeling, either he plays for him, or he doesn't, if they can't trade him. And then he just, you know, sits with no money coming in. And then he can't afford camels on his 31st birthday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we looked that up, by the way. You know, he came in on a camel for his 31st birthday. What did you say it was? $250 for the first 2 hours?
Yeah, and then $100 for each additional hour after the first two.
I had no idea. That sounds like a pretty good deal for a camel.
I agree. I bet a cow, a pig, probably costs that much.
Well, I'd love to get that for the pig. I'd be farming him out if I could do that. You can ride it on him. And we, by the way, unlike the Saints, you know what we named our pig?
What?
Piggy. Because we talked, oh, we got to name him. Just call him Piggy. He's a pig. He's Piggy. All right, what else you got?
Number two, would you draft a running back if you were running the Vikings? And who would you draft?
If I were running the Vikings, first of all, I think that they, without Adrian Peterson, they're still in good shape with Jerick McKinnon. And I think that he, you know, he got hurt during the year. I think he could be a terrific running back and a big part of their offense. And actually, no one's going to get the kind of yardage as a running back that Adrian Peterson did. But he offers an ability to catch the ball, too, which is big. I'd also look in the draft, but not early. You know who's going to, somebody's going to get a steal in the draft with David Cobb from the Gophers. Because he is not going to go early because he has an injury. The kid suffered an injury before the scouting combine, and he just couldn't perform in it, and he couldn't do it at their pro day. So his stock is going to slide. He is a terrific young man and a terrific running back, and like I said, it'll be a steal for whoever got him, and I think the Vikings should be keeping an eye on him. I don't know that it'll slide out of the draft, Barbara, but it could happen. Some of these guys get hurt, they get scared away from him.
They do, and it would be really nice to see a Minnesota Gopher on the Vikings, I think.
Yeah, I'd love to see him get Max Williams, but I don't know that that's going to happen. I don't think it's early enough that teams feel it's early enough when they have the pick, and he'll be gone by the end of the first round. What else you got there, young fella?
And finally, are the Vikings set at wide receiver with the addition of Mike Wallace's?
Mike what? Wallace's?
Wallace's. That's how he talks.
You've heard Golem talk before.
I have.
Who hasn't? You know, the whole thing with Mike Wallace, I don't know if you could just, can you trust him? And I'm not talking about off the field. I mean on the field. Great speed, much like you, Hellboy. Maybe even faster. No,
and it's a great way to stay in shape.
But it's the hands. I mean, he has to make the catch, and he has to not fight with his coaches like he did in Miami. He has to get along with people, too. That's the problem with some of these wide. They're a squirrely bunch. I mean, when you look at some of the guys who've come, well, Randy Moss was a great example, but he backed it up with talent.
Performance.
And,
absolutely.
But Bernard Berrian was a goofball. You know, when he came through here, he was a speed burner, but he couldn't keep it together. And the Jerome Simpson was his. I mean, this guy, did you follow the Jerome Simpson case?
I did.
And again, talking to Barbara Behrens from Behrens and Miller, this guy was given a new lease on life after basically having drugs sent to his home. And he just pissed it away. I don't understand the mentality of some people.
It's tough. I think it's very, very tough and challenging to be in the spotlight like that.
Well, and I haven't, I mean, I'll mention this briefly, but I'll give you an example. I say it's tough and I don't get it, but in a sense I do, because we did foster care and we had a kid who was a terrific athlete. And we got a call from the principal thinking, oh, what now? But he got basically made the honor roll because he was a smart kid, too. It was terrific. Great news. And hey, that's great. You know, we're really happy for you. Within a matter of days, he got thrown off the basketball team because he got caught smoking with another kid in the car. And I just think some people, they don't think they deserve success. They can't handle it because they don't feel there's such low self-esteem because all their lives they're beaten down and told you'll never amount to nothing, and it becomes self-fulfilling. They don't feel they deserve to feel good about themselves. And maybe that was the case with a guy like Simpson. I don't know. I just think it's so sad because there's so many people out there, if they just let themselves be and enjoy what comes to them, their lives would be so much better, and the lives of the people around them would too. So, I mean, so I guess I do understand it a little bit. You probably have seen that in people too.
Well, it's the two sides of genius. It always seems that those that are touched with that brush sometimes have such tragic flaws too. And I don't know if that's the human condition, but certainly a lot of people tend to shoot themselves in the foot.
And we can go off on a tangent about the Vikings and how for different they could as a team never handle success. They'd get close and they just, you know, do away with it and screw themselves over. We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, Barbara Behrens from Behrens and Miller and I will talk to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. We'll see how much he's into soccer and everything else. We'll be right back with Jim.
From pro to college to high school, we've got it all covered.
This guy is continuously failing drug tests. He has to be suspended because he's a loser. He's just an irresponsible mess.
Passionate sports talk on your sports station, 105 The Ticket.
We now go to Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com. Jim, we have Barbara Behrens with us again from Behrens and Miller. And I want to talk to you about this whole, and believe me, we've talked more about soccer than I ever thought would be imaginable. But I thought what Zimmer said about Adrian Peterson today, it was succinct and he nailed it. He said, we're good to go. I mean, he's under contract and we expect him to honor it. He's sending a message to AP, get your ass in here.
Well, it's really two-pronged. A, it's just simply the truth. I mean, he's not really... And Zimmer's a very blunt guy.
Yes.
That's why I like him. So all he's doing is offering the truth. He's under contract. You know, he really doesn't have any power or leverage here unless he wants to sit out, which is, you know, damaging his own career, his own legacy. So it's both the truth, and as you all know, the truth is the best negotiating stance. You know, when you say something that's truthful, that can't really be refuted, that puts you in the strongest position. I mean, and that's where the Vikings are. You know, it's really incumbent upon Peterson to either fulfill his contract or to shut up. Now, the other thing is, Bob, you and I both have covered the NFL for a long time, and this is the time when people throw around empty threats because there's nothing to be lost.
Yeah.
If Peterson can spend the next, what is it, March? So you can spend the next three, four months, saying and doing whatever he wants, and none of that really matters. What matters is whether he actually shows up when it's time for him to show up, and my guess is he would.
He wants the money. I don't think think there's any chance of him not showing up.
He'd have to let's say the Vikings don't trade him, and we still don't know whether they would or not. Spielman never tells the truth about that. That's the difference between Spielman and Zimmer. Spielman will play any games he wants with the truth. He'll say whatever gives him what he perceives to be the best public stance. So let's say if the Vikings don't trade him, then Peterson's options are either playing football for $13 million and advancing his legacy, his career, or sitting out, not getting paid, and having a huge hole in his resume when it's time for him to be compared to the other great running backs in NFL history. So if the Vikings don't trade him, he's going to have to play.
And if it's like many NFL contracts, there are roster bonuses tied to showing up for training camp and for some of those, the mini camps they have too. So he may have some, and I don't know, does he have anything due in April or May or June, for any of these roster bonuses? Because that's when a lot of them come due.
Right. I think I've known that in the past. I don't have it in front of me right now, so I'm not sure 100%. But even then, you're talking about negotiating stances. Maybe Peterson would be willing to blow off a certain bonus to make his point, but he ain't gonna blow off the bulk of the salary to make a point.
No one. And now I want to switch gears on you. And like I said, we mentioned, this whole soccer thing. I how do you have three billionaire owners, Bill McGuire, the Pollads, and Glenn Taylor, and they won't say they're leaving open the door to try to get public funding? I mean, it's one thing when it's one billionaire owner wanting public funding, but three of them, I just don't see how they can. Anyone that would line up for them, it's like political suicide.
I actually don't think they're going to end up getting or even pushing that hard for public assistance. Now, they became billionaires for good reason. They became billionaires, I'm talking about the families, not necessarily the individuals. They became billionaires because they're going to negotiate. Good negotiators don't pay for things they don't have to pay for. If there's an expeditious way to get the public to pay for some of it, to get some of it, through taxpayer dollars, through some kind of a bond, through some kind of an extra tax, whatever, of course they're going to take that option. No matter how much money they have, they're going to want the best deal they can get. They're deal makers. They're going to want the best deal they can get. But after talking to people today and being at that press conference and hearing what other people had to say behind the scenes and talking to, other of our reporters who have sources, I really do think they just build it when the time comes with their own money.
Well, there has to be some mechanism for that because you don't get awarded a franchise unless you tell them if we don't get help, we'll build it ourselves.
And that's the sense that I got is that they are absolutely prepared to do that. If some legislator wants to help them get a better deal than that, they'll take it. But I think they are prepared to build it themselves.
And it's good that Barbara's here, because Barbara might have more background on this than either of us, Barbara Behrens from Behrens and Miller. There are, when companies go into a city, there are breaks that any company can get. I mean, they could save money in a lot of ways in terms of tax breaks, can't they?
Generally, yes. That's how they negotiate to transfer like a corporate headquarters or whatever. That's very common to have that type of arrangement with wherever they're going to be moving.
And that could be millions of dollars of savings too in different ways, not just for in tax breaks, but in a lot of ways, even land,
exactly.
So I mean, maybe if they get that, but if they try to go above and beyond what other companies have gotten, I think that's where they get a heavier scrutiny. Because Jim, I don't remember, you ever recall three billionaires buying one entity?
I don't, and also this isn't going to be, the new Viking Stadium or Target Field. It's going to be less. It's three billionaires building a less expensive, smaller stadium on a piece of land that, it's probably risen in value lately, but it's not it ain't the prime real estate in downtown Minneapolis right now. Like I said, we all get crazy about stadium issues, and they become politically divisive. They become some hammers and class warfare. But I just don't think it's that big a deal this time around. I think they'll get. I think they'll just simply take the best deal there is, even if it's no deal.
Yeah, they're not going to let this go away. It's not going to be. Well, no. Put it, there's not going to be 10 or 15 or 20 years of attempting to get a stadium and it being knocked away. I still don't know why the U can't work and just using the lower bowl. But that's not even on their radar, I don't believe.
Well, they are, you know, and I talked to some people about that today, too. They really do want this to be downtown Minneapolis,
yeah,
where all the millennials are moving, where all the condos and new apartments are going up, where the, you know, population is skewing younger and more diverse. They, you know, and they want it to be a soccer stadium. And, they, you know, and look at it from their perspective. If you're trying to grow soccer, if you're trying to promote soccer, playing in somebody else's hat-filled football stadium on turf really doesn't say big league. It says you're, you know, yeah, it's like the kids who used to play football in the metro after the Vikings game. You know, you're not really saying this is really important here. You're saying we're taking whatever we can get. So I get, you know, if what they really care about is the future of soccer in America, that they want their own place. I understand that.
Well, I have to be careful because I was taking a few shots at soccer earlier and I got an angry tweet from my wife who once was a Strikers cheerleader. And she was very upset because of how fun soccer is.
Here's the other thing. I mean, I think, let's be honest. Let's be demographically accurate about this. Most middle-aged white sports columnists in America at some point in our lives have made fun of soccer. And whether, you know, even, I don't even dislike soccer.
Hey, I coached it.
I've coached it. I played intramural soccer. My high school had a great soccer team. I loved, you know, going to the games. There's been a point in all of our lives where we've just been the jerk who made fun of soccer just because it makes the soccer people crazy. You know, there have been times where we've all been antagonists. But even if you don't like soccer, I would like to see Minneapolis have this added to its palette. I mean, you know, this is a great place to live because we have everything. We have theater, we have a great music scene, we have all the major sports, we have a major university, we have a great minor university. You know, less, not minor, but smaller universities. We have great schools. It's a clean place. It's become more and more diverse. This is a great place to live. And I think adding a soccer-only stadium in downtown Minneapolis, where right near to all the people who will really appreciate it, is a great step forward for the city.
Jim, I agree. You know what? We're running out of time here. I know that you're going to be talking to Mike Russo tomorrow, right?
Yes, tomorrow 5:00 at the Liffey.
And it's T-minus 2 days for you and me to O'Gara's on Friday.
You better be studying up, man.
I'm cramming. You know what I want to. When we talk tomorrow, I'll ask you. Maybe we could talk a little bit about it then too. When I came here, I wasn't planning on being here more than a year or two.
I thought it was a 3-year assignment. When
okay,
I came up here.
Then you were the same way I was too. And Barbara's shaking her head. She probably felt the same way too. We'll talk about that. We have to take a break. Jim, thanks so much. Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune, SuhanUnfiltered.com. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thanks, bud.
All right, we're going to come right back and talk to Barbara. I think you've talked to John Tower before too, the coach of the St. Thomas basketball team and a psychology professor at St. Thomas. Want to talk to him about the Sweet 16. Get his views on soccer too. I'm sure we've all been soccer dads. And I'll tell you about that too when we get back. I kept the clock. Every kid had exactly the same amount of time on the field because I made sure no kid could say, or no parent, that kid was on longer. No, it wasn't. It's right here. Here's the chart. Anyway, we'll be right back.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities, On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner of MinnesotaHockeyMag.com and Chad Graff of the St. Paul Pioneer Press.
Because of the hole that the Wild put themselves in January, they just can't afford to be losing any games right now, and that's so mentally taxing.
If you continue to win, each game gets amplified, each mistake. This is playoff hockey for, what, about 6-7 markets in the West. That's what the NHL wants.
On the Ice, hockey talk every Saturday morning at 9, only on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
Have you played this for John Tower before?
I don't know.
I thought you had a memory. You remembered everything you played.
Yeah, but I think I'm running out of things.
My
I usually
God.
Play something different for John because I have no idea what he actually likes.
Because he never got you the list.
I don't think so.
You're going to bitch about that now, right?
No, why not? Can be anybody else's fault except mine.
Okay. Well, at least you're getting the Beatles for Barbara Behrens here. Barbara Behrens from Behrens & Miller with us, along with John Tower, the coach of the St. Thomas basketball team, and also a professor at St. Thomas, professor of psychology. John, how are you?
Doing great, Bob. Thanks for having me.
All right, I took a stab in the dark here. Because you are a basketball coach, but have you had time? You also have children. Were you a soccer coach somewhere along the way too for your kids?
Oh, I've dabbled, probably very poorly, but sure. I've coached a little t-ball, a little soccer. I've poorly coached just about every youth sport,
except basketball. I'm sure you did. Did you ever coach basketball with your kids?
They're trying to rope me into spring sixth grade basketball right now, and. As much as I've tried to tell them that, you know, I lost the last game I coached and they probably could be better, they're still willing to do it. So I think I'm going to try it this spring.
You'll have a great time. Although, you know, after dealing with, you know, men in their early 20s, late teens and early 20s, it's going to be interesting to see how you deal with these kids.
The 12-year-old prepubescent boys,
yes,
whose attention spans are about, you know, 12 seconds long.
I would advise you not have cheerleaders because they're going to start paying attention only to them.
I'll keep that in mind.
So, well, John, I wanted to ask you about a few things and get Barbara Behrens here with us. If she has some questions for you, too. What do you think of the Sweet 16, how it's shaken out?
Well, I think it's been a fascinating tournament. I mean, it's March Madness for a reason. And, you know, after the first day where there are so many upsets, since then, it really, in many ways, has gone according to form. And it's hard to think Kentucky's not the decided favorite. That said, I think, you know, look around, there's a lot of intriguing matchups. And at this time of the year, I'm amazed at how little difference, and we can call it parity, competitive balance, but I'm always amazed at how little difference there is really between even many of the 1 and 2 seeds and the 9 and 10 seeds. I mean, these teams are all really, really good. They're competitive. They're battle tested. So it's great fun to watch as a spectator.
I'm looking forward to the game, and I mentioned this Monday. The game I'm most looking forward to is that Notre Dame Wichita State game. But the bracket I'm looking forward to is seeing who survives out of the West because I fully expect Wisconsin to play Arizona for the regional title, but to see which of those two teams emerges from the West.
Yeah, and that would be a rematch of last year's Elite Eight, I think. I'm a big Badger fan, went to graduate school there, so love the Badgers, but I think Arizona, you know, you look at the teams that could potentially knock off Kentucky, I think Arizona and Wisconsin are two that probably have as good a chance as any.
And actually, Kentucky is terrific, but even West Virginia and the winner of the Notre Dame-Wichita State game can give them trouble.
Yeah, West Virginia, I'll tell you, if you have a chance to watch them play, they I think they lead the country in most fouls committed, most steals, turnover ratio, as well as offensive rebounding. I mean, they fly after the ball. We talk to our team all the time about how getting the ball is a skill, that some guys just find a way to get it, other guys find a way to lose it. West Virginia is about as good a team. Their shooting percentage is abysmal. And yet they're in the Sweet 16 because they're so good at offensive rebounding, pressure defense.
Yep.
It's amazing.
Forcing things to happen. You know, I wanted to ask you, actually, John, the team that wound up knocking you off, did they get knocked off in the next round?
No, Northwestern went out. They beat Elmhurst out of Illinois, who's a really good team out of the CCIW, and then Northwestern lost to East Texas Baptist State, who ended up losing to Stevens Point, who won the national title. So, it was our region, Stevens Point, who we beat in the regular season and is a great rival of ours. And they just really rolled through the tournament. It was impressive. It rarely happens. And they had maybe one game within 10 points. And during the year, last year, Stevens Point was dominant. They were the consensus number one. This year, they were not and got knocked off last year, and they won it this year. So hats off to them.
Well, and hats off to you, by the way. Barbara, we are talking to the West Region Coach of the Year, John Tower.
That's an amazing. Congratulations.
That's a wonderful
amazing
thing, John. Congratulations
award
on that.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Barbara.
And also, you've got one of your players made the All-West Region team. Marcus Alapate, is that how you say his last name?
He did. Marcus was a real success story out of Bloomington Jefferson, and he played in the D3 All-Star game last weekend out in Salem, Virginia. So he was one of 16 seniors who were selected to play out in that game. And he's just, you know, a great all-around player, scored over 1,000 points on his career, and entrepreneurship major who's already started his own little clothing company. Really, it's, you know, when you talk about the balance of athletics and academics and career preparation, Marcus really embodies that.
Now, John, I'm going to just ask you, I'll put you on the spot a little bit, because you have had success as a basketball coach and you're a professor. Do you get a lot of calls, or have you made it known you're really happy where you are and you're not interested in looking for another job? And by the way, Barbara's representing Hellboy in her best baseball career, so she might be able to help you out too if you're looking for an agent as a coach.
Well, I'm always looking for an agent. I thought you were going to make an offer to me on air. You know what? I love where I'm at St. Thomas, and it's, you know, you certainly would listen to people, but the jump from, you know, Division III to Division I is probably, in terms of X's and O's, is much less than it is in terms of relocating geographically. There's only one D1 school in the state. You'll see it happen more out east where there are a lot of smaller Division I's. Yep. So, you know, I'd never say never. You never know how long you'll be at a place. But I, you know, my heart's at St. Thomas. I love coaching here and the chance to be successful and mentor young men. So, you know, we'll see. But I feel very fortunate to be here.
Well, and you have the added, I mean, the fact that you're also a professor and you've shown no interest in giving that up. I mean, you have one full plate, John. I got to be honest with you. To be a full-time coach and a full-time professor.
Well, and not full-time professor anymore, so I did scale that back. I used to be full-time professor for 11 years, and so now I'm teaching one class a semester and still dabbling in some research. I'm finishing a book on youth sports, actually, and crazy sports parents, so that should be out this summer, which I'm really excited about. But it is a full plate, but you know this, when you do something you love, it doesn't seem like you're working when it's late at night and you're, whether it's recruiting or watching film, it's doing the stuff that you're passionate about.
Well, John, I hadn't realized you were such a slacker. Just won a semester. I'll tell you very quickly because we have to wrap it up. My son, it was like kindergarten basketball, and I realized I never really show much. I know show emotion at games, but I actually yelled at the ref, who was another mom. The kid's running with the ball. He's not dribbling. And I said, am I out of my mind? And that was the one time I spoke up. I've never spoken up at a kid's event since.
I'm with you. I try and keep my mouth shut. In fact, other parents often chuckle. So they see me coach where I don't always keep my mouth shut as much as I should. And they're amazed that I'm quiet over in the corner. I'm just like, look, if I get stressed out about 10-year-old and 12-year-old basketball,
something's wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, John Tower, thank you, coach at St. Thomas. And thank you to Barbara Behrens from Behrens & Miller for joining us. And we're going to turn it over to Durant Hubert, superstar Mike Morris, and Ben Holson. Barbara, it's great. We have to make this a regular deal. We're going to be right back with Mike and Ben.
Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.